Welcome to Totally Unrelated. I'm your host, Adrian Cosby. We're broadcasting live on top of the Amley Building in Evanston, Illinois. I don't know why I say that like it's some sort of big deal. It's just, it's the building I live in. And it's pretty nice on the rooftop. So when the weather's nice, I come up here and I try to do the podcast. It's a little bit windy. I tried to adjust the gain on the microphone and I'm using the sock, so this will be a test. If it sounds like crap, I probably have to redo the whole thing, but I'm going to sit up here for an hour, at least I'm going to try to, and discuss the day's events. It's Friday, September, 25th? And it's been an interesting week. Today, really messed up my stories, because nothing but the Pope on TV. I think I've heard that before, that there's nothing but Pope on TV, but today it's actually true. I mean, Pope all over the TV, every channel. And the last time I checked, Catholicism wasn't that popular. Now, I'm not trying to shit on any Catholics or anything. I mean, if I am, I'd like to shit on all the religions equally. But really, I mean, it's a lot of Pope. It's a lot of Pope. I could do with less Pope. However, I don't really watch that much TV. But I thought it was going to be just taking over the morning news stories. But I didn't know it was going to be taking over all of the TV coverage. Now, Comedy Central isn't airing Pope. So good on them. Just reruns of South Park, I'm sure. Or Brian Regan, who's got a special coming out tomorrow night at 9 o'clock on Comedy Central. It's going to be the first ever live stand-up special broadcast on Comedy Central, which is interesting because I, too, will be recording my set in Michigan at a bar show with Steve Ayotte, who's one of my favorite guys to work with. I've only worked with him once, but we had a blast. So hopefully that Brian doesn't... Hopefully I don't take away from Brian's crowd. You know what I mean? I don't want him to have less viewership because I'm performing. You know, Steve and I, we draw, you know, tens of people sometimes. And yeah, I really feel like this is Brian Regan's moment. You know, I want to let him have that. If I had known when I booked the gig that Brian was going to be performing live on TV, I would have still taken the gig. I'm not going to lie. I would have taken the gig because I need that money. And I'm working on some new stuff. And this will be my first chance to get it all out. I was in Toledo last weekend. It was a very nice weekend working with Guy Tori and the comedy famous Tom Dustin. I should say comedian famous Tom Dustin. I asked him, I said, "Do you realize how famous you are amongst comedians?" And he said, "Yeah, I tried to write a check with it for my rent, but they didn't take it." And I thought, well, that's just because you didn't ask them right. This guy's like a living legend. And I'd like to say that I kind of upstaged him this summer by sustaining the worst injury at a comedy venue that you're not performing at. Tom broke his elbow at the Dayton Funny Bone on a Sunday night when he wasn't performing, and I broke my teeth at Cincy Brouhaha when I wasn't performing. And I just sort of feel like because I took the ambulance ride and because I'm still dealing with the repercussions of it, and he's out of his sling and he's just walking around getting ready to play softball, I feel like I suffered a more traumatic injury. Plus there was more witnesses to my injury. He didn't even know he broke his elbow until the next day when he went to the emergency room. I knew right away that I had destroyed my grill, as did several hundred people. But enough about that. So we covered the Pope, we covered Toledo. Oh, Guy Tori. The first time I ever worked with Guy Tori was a very tumultuous situation. He was not in a good mood because he didn't like the feature act. It's not that he didn't like the feature act, he just didn't. The feature act and he were too similar, and he didn't like the way that made the show top to bottom, but he was taking it out on everybody. He apologized by Sunday, but it was one of those things where I kind of think for Guy, being a little bit upset is part of his process. Being a little bit on edge as he goes on stage, you know, he can use it. Some people, I heard Joey Diaz talking about it on his podcast not too long ago. So I get it. I've done it before. I've thought to myself, I want to take a little bit of Kenny Carpenter on stage with me, who's a comedian, I think. He's not an angry dude, but I've seen him when he's less than thrilled. And the attitude is just kind of like, I think we were talking about, he had just won a contest at the Dayton Funny Bone, but it wasn't very well attended. All the shows leading up to this, it was called The Clash of the Comics, which should be coming back in 2016, if I have anything to say about it. It was like 10 comics perform. Whoever brings the most people gets to go up. You get 5 minutes. And then the best person that night wins $100 and a chance to host and MC the next show, the next clash. And all those shows were sold out. But then when the finals come, it's like people take a little bit of pressure off themselves and it's not as well attended. The finals that I watched and the finals that I was in were both about two-thirds full, whereas the night I performed, I think it was a sold-out audience. The night I got in, you know, the night I won. So I think I brought the most people when I was a finalist. But in any case, when Kenny Carpenter was a finalist and won, I saw him on the patio later and I said, man, congratulations, that was awesome. You were heads and tails above everybody else. And he was like, still got to go to work tomorrow. You know, I wish there had been more people here. You know, they was charging $5 for a ticket. They should have been charging like $3. And he's a white guy. He's just got kind of a slightly southern black accent. It's like a black scent. I don't even know. That's probably a hack term that some open micer's been using for 15 years. But it's a little bit of anger. I mean, he had already won. He had done everything he came to do. He was going to get his MC week. And he realized how inconsequential it was. And that's when I realized, like, that's my favorite kind of comedy. The kind of comedians that do this because they have to, not because they really want to or feel like it's going to lead to something major in the future. I think we all hope for something major in the future, but it's one of those things that takes so much luck and a good amount of positioning that, you know, it's better off not wishing for it. It's like being in prison. You know, when you're in prison, they say hope is a dangerous thing. Being a comedian is a lot like a prison sentence in that your time in matters and you might not ever get out. You know what I mean? Like your seniority is based on your time in. Then again, for some people, be in it for a lifetime and still get no respect, but those are people that get no respect in their life anyway. But time in matters. You might not ever get out. It could be a life sentence. And yeah. I'm going to stick with that analogy for now. So Guy Tori was good. Tom Dustin was good. Dominic Baker, the sound guy, and he also books the MCs in Toledo, was good. Always loved hanging out with Dom, who's a runner, by the way. For those of you that don't know, I run for my life. I just want to be in shape enough to run for my life is what the whole premise of that is. But Dominic has been running in 5Ks, and he's been running them in like 21 minutes. That's 3.1 miles in like averaging around 7 minutes a mile, which is ridiculous. I mean, I think he's a little bit younger than me. I mean, he might be 10 years younger than me for all I know, or more. But he's balding, so it's hard to tell. But still, 7 minute miles, that's now my new goal. Now I'm virtually racing Dominic Baker, who is about a foot shorter than me and easily 60 pounds lighter than me. But on that front, on my MyFitnessPal front, which is, I feel like I should be doing commercials for MyFitnessPal. This is the best app I've ever used because it merges my love for social media with a much more positive premise, which is being in shape and motivating other people that you've never met before to be in shape. I literally do not know anybody on MyFitnessPal. I don't think I've met any of these people in person. If I do, It's strictly by coincidence. I tried to search for my Facebook friends. I tried to search for my contacts, and there's people on there, but none of them active. I think it's a kind of app a lot of people download and never use, like Instagram. But I'm loving it. I'm loving every minute of it. I've been doing a cycling routine that I got off the blog from my fitness pal, which is, it's not, they didn't invent it, but it's basically just something that they shared, and I was like, that sounds like what I need to do. And it's just 8 cycles on an exercise bike, whatever resistance you're comfortable with. If you get on an exercise bike and you have to pump up the resistance to 6 or 7 just to kind of keep from spinning out of control, that's like where I'm at. I have to bump it up to 12, otherwise I'm going too fast and it's not cool. So what I'll do is start off at 12, do that for 30 seconds, and once it gets to the 30 second mark, then I bump it up to 16. Now they didn't give me this. I added that part on my own. You could keep it at the same, but you'd probably want to bump it up to like a 14. Just because you're going to start spinning faster and faster. And when the resistance is too low, spinning fast kind of, for me, feels like I'm hopping out of the seat and I'm not sitting in the bike. It doesn't feel good. So for 30 seconds at a leisurely pace, like what you would do, just a slightly brisk, but not, you could do it for an hour straight and wouldn't be taxed. That's the way I'd like to think of it. So for me, that's about 70 RPMs with a 12 resistance. Then I bump it up to 16, and I try to keep that for 20 seconds, and I try to keep an 80 RPM instead of 70. I bump up the RPMs by 10. And then for the last 10 seconds, you just go all out. And I usually can peak around 130 RPMs with a 16 resistance. But that's like peak. The average is probably more closer to like 110, 119. Somewhere between there. But I'm loving that routine because you only do it for 8 cycles, so it's technically like 8 minutes. I try to do a 2-minute warm-up and a 2-minute cool-down, so the whole thing lasts about 12 minutes. And then I'll go lift some weights, and then I'll go run or whatever. But when you get done with that bike routine, your quads and just every part of my leg feels so engaged. And when I'm taking every step, I feel like my muscles are just flexed and engaged. And that only lasts for a few minutes, but it's a good workout. It's a good, I don't even know what it's good for, but it gets my endorphins going. It makes me want to work out some more, and I can still run. I can still run after I've done it. I'm not too taxed. Sometimes I lift too much with my legs, and running is like, I feel like I'm going to fall down. And it's not that I don't have the energy to do it. It's just that my legs are blown out, sort of. That being said, I've been using MyFitnessPal for, I think, 27 days straight now. It tells you every 5 days, you know, when you hit a streak. And that's just entering in what I eat. And I'll be honest, I'm not 100%, but I'm probably 98%. You know, on some days I get everything, and on other days I might eat a slice of cheese or something like that that I forget to enter. But it's really taking care of the snacking. Because it's like I want to enter it all in. I want to see. And so over the course of the month that I've been using it, I'd say about 3 weeks I've been really focused on it. And my total weight loss right now is around 9 pounds over this month. And that's a little bit better than you're supposed to, because I think the most you're supposed to lose in a week and still be considered healthy is about 2 pounds a week. At least for somebody like me, I'm not that overweight. In fact, if you go by BMI, I'm overweight considerably at 216. I should be in the 190 range. But if you just go by my age, height, and current weight, I'm at 216. I'm in, I think they said it, this, and I don't even know where they're getting it from. But I looked at a website last night, said, what's my ideal weight? And it said it was between 209 and 230. And I can tell you, at 230, I have a lot of excess baggage on my frame. That was the other thing it checked, was your frame size. Now, I think I have a big frame, because the test that they wanted you to do is to take your hand and wrap it around the thinnest part of your wrist. And if your fingers touch, then you have a large frame. And if your fingers almost touch, or if most of your fingers touch, so you have a large frame. If only one of your fingers barely touches, you have a medium frame, and if none of your fingers touch, then they say you have a small frame. So I'm going to do it real quick and see what happens. I can get three of my fingers to touch my thumb when I do that. So I think it's fair to say I have a large frame. But I am definitely a wiry fellow, kind of lanky. And since I've lost this weight, I can tell. My pants fit me looser. I can see my abs a little bit through my belly fat, which is still there. I still have a little bit of tire, what I call spare tire, hanging off the side. I guess it's a muffin top, a little bit of a muffin top. It's not nearly as pronounced as it was. I mean, I was grabbing hands full of fat off my sides this winter, and it was, I don't want to say it was disgusting, but it was troubling. It was troubling because it was hanging over the top of my jeans, and that's just not a good look for a tall person. I mean, some people I know gain weight and they stay taut all the way through. It's like their skin keeps everything in like a sausage, firmly in its skin. And then when I gain weight, it's like the sausage skin has been punctured in certain areas and has growths. I mean, I feel like there's lumps hanging off. Sure, probably a bit of body dysmorphia involved here. Everybody's got it for themselves, and if you don't, good for you. But I'm finally getting to a point where I feel a little bit lighter, and I'm starting to feel more confident about how I look, which is something that I never really grappled with because I took it for granted for so long. But just like your smile, sometimes it takes knocking out a couple teeth to realize how good you had it before. I used to be able to lose weight just by thinking about it. And by think, I mean, you know, just by slightly limiting what I ate. But it seems like for the last 2 years, I haven't been able to drop in below 220 for a couple of years. But at the same time, I was completely ignorant to my food health. For a while there, I was eating on a paleo diet, but I didn't care about calories or anything like that. I just knew not to eat carbs, and I was able to lose weight that way. But I found that I'd rather eat a full, more robust meal, but knowing, you know, how many calories are in some of the condiments that you eat and some of the side things, the extra things, the sour cream, the extra cheese, the cheesecake, some of these things are so high in calories that it's like a meal unto itself, which is okay. You know, I'm not going to say, you can look at my diary, it's public on my Fitness Pal, and it's not like I'm eating an exemplary diet. I'm just eating up at portions and proportions that are in tune with me getting into my ideal target weight, which is what this has been really helpful with. I use the iHealth scale, so every time I step on it, whether I want to or not, it sends the information to my phone. So if I gain or I lose, it shows up. And that's been a big motivator. My Moto 360 watch, who is another person I should be doing commercials for, Motorola, come talk to me, has been another big help because it keeps all of that right on my wrist. I like to keep my phone tucked away as much as I can. And being able to look at my watch and see how many steps I've taken, what my pulse rate is, all this information, it's very useless. I want you to understand me when I say I realize how useless this information is. This information isn't, none of these bits of information on its own is making my life any better or happier. For some reason, it's just the system that's in place. Tracking my food, being able to track my workouts, how fast am I running? Am I making any progress? I barely ever go back and look at it. But because it's being recorded, it's very important to me that I continue to do it. I have no idea why. It may be OCD. It may be schizophrenia. But it's working for me, and that's all I know right now. It may cease to work for me, or I may fall out of the habit, but I've never been this consistent with working out. I've never tried tracking my food before. Speaking of pulse rate, when I had my accident, the first thing the EMTs noticed was that I had low blood pressure and low pulse rate. And they asked if I was healthy. I told them I ran every day, and they said, oh, well, that's it. And then they checked it again at the hospital. They commented on it, same questions, told them I ran. They said, oh, that explains it. Went to the physician, checked it, same thing. And he wanted me to see a cardiologist just to make sure, that everything was in line. And it's really neat the way this North Shore Health Systems works, because they're all on the same web information sharing system. So he was able to look at my blood test that my physician had done, which I was able to see the same day that I had them done, and see his notes on it. So it was, it just saved a lot of time, saved a whole appointment basically for me going back to get the results. When I went in to the cardiologist yesterday, and mind you, this is after working in construction, which I'll get to after this story. I've been working in construction, freelance, if you will, for the last couple of weeks, and I feel like that's been a hell of a workout. I mean, it's, if you look at how many steps I take, I average walking about 6.5 miles inside of a building, up and down stairs. It's not counting any of the heavy lifting that I'm doing as far as calorie burning, but a lot of the trips up and down stairs involve carrying bags of concrete or brick and a lot of heavy lifting. So I've been burning a lot of extra calories by filling up my day with that instead of just sitting around wondering what I'm going to do. So I don't know if that had a, I don't know if that's a contributing factor to this cardiologist appointment, but when I went in, the first thing they did was they took my pulse. Now, when I was at the scene of the accident, my pulse rate was a 51, and they said that was shockingly low. When I went to the cardiologist, I registered a 41 beat per minute pulse rate, which is, I've never seen it that low. I was shocked. I would have been less shocked if it had been 82. But the doctor seemed to think that it wasn't a cause for alarm unless it dropped down into the 30, or I was having increased fainting spells or lightheadedness, dizziness, like the head rushes. I didn't know you weren't supposed to have a head rush every time you stood up before my accident. I just thought that was just part of standing up too fast or something. Oh, I stood up too fast. No. You're dehydrated and you have a low blood pressure, so that blood doesn't go uphill as fast. And when you're 6'3", 6'4", well, it can take a second. So, been hydrated, staying hydrated, it's been helping a lot. I haven't had any head rushes to speak of. If I do feel one, it's slight, and then I make sure I hydrate. So there's that. Back to the construction. Oh, and the cardiologist had no worries. He said, he mentioned pacemaker, he mentioned Dick Cheney, but I think that was all just to make sure that I wasn't going to start smoking again. The construction work I'm doing is at the new Funny Bone at the Liberty Township / Cincinnati Funny Bone. I think it's just south of Middletown. I'd have to look at it on a map, which I'm not doing right now, but I see a Middletown exit right before we get off the exit going south. It's about a 40-minute drive from Dayton. It's maybe 35-minute drive from Dayton. And if you were coming from Cincinnati, it's probably about a 15-minute drive out of the northernmost point of Cincinnati. And, you know, that whole area between Dayton and Cincinnati is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. They're building up Springboro. They're building up around Middletown. And this Liberty Township area is a lot like Springboro. They're building a gigantic mall right there. And this Funny Bone is going to be the biggest Funny Bone in Ohio, I think. It may not be. The Improv in Cleveland, which is in the same family, is pretty big. I think it seats over 400. This is going to seat, I think, 450. The one in Columbus has just been retrofitted, and it's similar to this one in that it has multiple tiers. So this one's got a pit, like a floor, with three tiers, and then it's got an upper balcony level with two tiers. So you can be sitting pretty high up. It looks almost like a theater in the round. Maybe the Schuster Center, if you've ever been to the Schuster Center in Dayton, Ohio. It's like a mini Schuster is how I would imagine it. And it looks exciting. It's amazing to be building a Funny Bone. It's amazing to be back in construction at all, because that's what I did for many years before getting into comedy. And it was, I don't want to say it was my life's work, but I was very good at it. I was proficient. It's fun to build. It's fun to show up to work and have slightly different tasks to do every day, but still be moving towards the same direction. But more than anything, you get to see the progress over time, and you get to see that what you did came out well. It's like cutting grass. I loved cutting grass because you'd see a yard that looked like the house was abandoned, and when you left, it looked like it was going up for sale, and you did that, and it's just a little satisfaction thing. Just to, you know, it's like reorganizing your closet, something you can take a little bit of pride in. I've been doing a little bit of everything there. A lot of carrying shit up and down stairs, painting. I did some masonry grout for the upstairs stage. And it's a lot. It's very nice. It's very ornate. So there's a lot of attention to detail. I've been only really been working about 3 days a week because I have gigs and other things I have to get to, but the last thing I was working on was hand painting the stair rail, the handrail in the stairway, in the main stairway, which was a real pain in the ass because you had to use a roller and a brush, and then back to a roller, then back to a brush to touch it all up. And I made a good day of it, but it looks good. And every time I'm in there, I'll touch that handrail and think, I painted this, I did this. A sense of pride to that, even though it's a laborious task. It's an interesting job because I can come and go as I please until they tell me I can't. So if this job existed here in Chicago, I'd go there every day and work some hours, probably 8 to 9 hours a day. But it's not. Maybe it does exist somewhere, but I'm not in there with those people like that. This has like some dedicated employees, and I'm just a laborer. So what's interesting about it is if I was going to go get a job today, say, screw comedy, I just want a job. Maybe I'll do comedy on the weekends or when it's available. I wouldn't do this job. I probably wouldn't go apply for a construction job. And if I did, I would be applying for a construction office job of some sort, sales, estimating. So, I mean, I've done what I'm doing now before, and I've always graduated out of it. But this is the job, and it's kind of like you're working for family because it's the funny bone. My checks say funny bone. And the general manager from Dayton, Doc, is there, you know, doing the exact same things I'm doing. And it's just cleaning up and, you know, whatever tasks they ask. And it's never too hard. It may be hard and heavy, but it's never mentally challenging. And I get to work with Jay Snyder, who is also a comedian, and it's fun. You know, when you're working with another comedian, it's never bad, especially if you like them. So we've been doing that. I'm here this week. I have shows in Michigan, a show in Michigan tomorrow, and then another show here at Zany's on Tuesday, and then I'll head back to Ohio. That's the plan right now, unless my agent calls. And then I'll probably stay in Ohio for a couple weeks. Help finish out this funny bone because I don't have any gigs for the first part of October yet. And I can do some gigs in Dayton, and I can do some in Cincinnati, which is right there. So we'll see what happens. It's time to get this new material out and make some money on the way. We can work as many hours as we want. We show up around 7 in the morning, and we could stay till 9 or 10 at night every day. They work 7 days a week. These guys are animals. There's some real characters on the job. It made me realize that all construction jobs are basically the same. You have, you know, basically the same people on every job site. You have your superintendent, you have your assistant superintendent, and then you have your foreman. Now, the superintendent is a guy who's done it all before. He's kind of like the president. He's not overly excited about anything. That's for the assistant superintendent, who's not like the vice president. He's like the chief of staff. He's like the guy that has to know everything and has to bring it to the superintendent's attention if it warrants it. And then you have the foreman, who's also seen it all before, but he's more like a field sergeant, or he's in the trenches. He's actually working from time to time. Some foremen manage to stay clean, but the foreman I respects, that the foremans that I respects, you know, he get his hand dirty. The foreman that I respect is in the trenches getting dirty with the troops. He may not be actively firing a weapon, but he's got one slung over his shoulder and he's given directions. So that's definitely what the dynamic is here. You have Todd, who's the superintendent. You have Skip, who's the assistant superintendent, kind of being groomed to take over for Todd. And then you have Butch, who's the foreman. And what's funny about it is that they've never told me their job titles. They've never mentioned their job titles. It's just obvious that if you had to give them titles, that's what they'd be. Now, Skip does some work, and Todd is truly a superintendent. Skip does get dirty, but he's always being pulled off of things because he's, you know, assistant superintendent. People have questions. So he'll start something. Like I saw one time he had the grinder out and he was going to grind down these welds. And I thought this is not the right task for him because it requires diligence for about an hour and a half straight. And there's no way people aren't going to mess with him for an hour and a half straight. And sure enough, I saw the grinder on the ground for about 3 hours. It wasn't straight, but it was the wrong task. And I know why he wanted to do the task. He wanted to do the task because he's like, if I start doing this, no one will bother me for an hour and a half. And that it was good thinking, but not accurate thinking. You know, sometimes you can hide and work. People would be like, I don't want to bother him while he's doing that, because it's loud and messy. But when the question's this far along, the thing's like about to open up in 20 days. So, and they'll be working until it opens, and then probably for a few weeks after, just doing touch up and punch list stuff. It's been great. I've really been enjoying working there in construction, mostly because the terms of the agreement are so agreeable that it's impossible. Plus, you get that sense when you're doing a job for somebody that they appreciate. I've worked in some realms where it was like use them and lose them. Didn't matter how well you did the job, how much better you were than the next guy, you were only going to get so much credit, and they were only going to give you so much, so many accolades for what you've done. This job, I get almost no accolades, but I can tell they appreciate it. The foreman told me, Butch, at the end of my first week, he said, I could tell you're a worker. And that may not mean much to some people, but I can tell Butch is a worker. So it's one of those things that you recognize in somebody else. Sometimes I've seen people and I ask them, you know, I was like, have you ever thought about doing comedy? And they're like, no. And I have to tell them, I'm like, because you got it. You know, whatever it is that we have in us that doesn't allow us to bite our tongue when something funny is about to happen. And also the control of not saying just stupid things. I've seen that in a few people, and I had to tell them, you know, hey, yo, you're a funny dude. If you were hanging out with me and my comedian friends, nobody would be able to tell you're not a comedian. And I get sometimes like, thanks. But other people, I get like a genuine slow head nod like, thanks, dude. I needed that. Because sometimes game needs to recognize game. You know, and there's nothing wrong with pointing out that you like the way somebody plays. I think that's what this world is missing an abundance of, is people in the fold telling people out of the fold, hey, if you ever want to come play, let me know. You can come play. And everything. In any realm or endeavor, I think that even if they don't come play, it can be hugely empowering to have somebody feel like, hey, you know what? I was invited to play. I know if I'd gotten invited to play comedy 10 years before I invited myself, I would have gone. I may not have played, but I would have gone for the invitation. I would have gone to see what it was about and see what it was like. I think for comedy, you have to reach a breaking point of, you know, I can no longer live my life the way I've been living it unless I try this. And that may not be true for everybody, but it certainly was for me. If I had not tried comedy at the time I did, I probably would have killed myself. Not actively, but I was definitely spinning out of control. And I tried it, and it was all I needed for almost 2 years, was just to just have tried it. And then once I met other comedians that I was hanging out with, that's when it really took off. I met a guy at the end of the show on Sunday in Toledo. Told him to look me up on Facebook. I don't think he has yet. I don't think he will. I don't know if he will. But he was talking about wanting to do the open mic and wanting to pursue comedy. And just based on the initial conversation that I had with him, I saw that he would try, but I didn't get that this was his time yet. The way he talked about it and the way he talked to me was one of still in the question, and I want to experience this without having to really experience it phase. He wanted information on the open mic, which I feel like I gave him in spades. And I feel like he didn't like the part when I said, you know, you're going to have to bring some friends with you to kind of support you, because otherwise this whole thing falls apart very quickly without audience members that aren't comedians. And that's the one thing I think I hear from a lot of comedians, is they don't want to have to bring their friends along. And it is probably one of the most mentally taxing parts of starting in comedy, if you allow it to be. For instance, the most undesirable part of being a comedian for some people is the travel. Well, before I ever even performed a set, I had already resigned myself to some of these miseries. In fact, I would do jobs. I was a construction safety director, which was just like being a comedian, except the pay was a lot better. And I performed during the daytime instead of at night. But it was a lot of traveling, a lot of driving, 2 to 3 hours, 4 hours between jobs, trying to get 2 jobs in a day, sometimes 3, and only being there for a few minutes and then getting out and going to the next one, staying in hotels all week long. Very much like being a comedian, but very much not like being a comedian. But I resigned myself to the fact that traveling was just part of the gig. It is the gig. In fact, more so than even telling jokes is the gig, driving and traveling is the gig. And that's just what's so. So why would I ever second guess it, think about it? Why would I open an account for hate for it? You know what I mean? Because you have to hate something or become sick of it, you kind of have to open an account for it and invest in it. And I have no investment in hating driving. I have no investment in hating the travel. It's just part of the gig. I'm trying to think if there's any part of this that I really hate. The only part of it that I hate is not knowing what's next. And I don't even hate that. That's part of, like, what keeps me going. Sort of like you have to create your own destiny. So not knowing. Inactivity will equal inactive. So be active and reap the rewards. So I met this guy, and I tried to give him as much advice as I could, and I feel like this may not be his time right now, but my number one suggestion to him was, don't worry about this first open mic or trying to perform at it. If you haven't been practicing, if you don't have a set down, if you don't have 5 minutes ready to go, don't even worry about trying to get 5 minutes for this. Just go and watch. Find a friend that will go with you, or make it your mission to make a friend when you get there. It doesn't have to be all creepy, like, when you be my friend. It doesn't have to be all creepy, you know? Just hang out. Ask questions. I was blown away one time when my friend who's worked in construction his whole life, was telling me about work like he often would when he would get home. And he said something one time. He was like, you know, I can tell what trade or what somebody's job position or title is with that trade based on the tools that they have on. And at the time, that blew my mind. Because I was like, really? Don't all construction workers use the same tools? Don't they all look the same? No, they don't. But you wouldn't really know that if you didn't live in it and immerse yourself with the minutiae of it. So when you're at an open mic, you can kind of tell who's been at it, who hasn't. And after they've gone up, you can definitely tell who's been at it and who hasn't. And a lot of them have been at it. But you can see the people that you're like, I think I get along well with that guy. I think I just find that guy and just be like, hey, I'm starting out. You know, if he's a dick about it, then move on, because somebody else won't be. There'll be a comic there that's just so thrilled that you're asking them to talk about themselves and their journey through comedy, much like I was, that's somebody you could latch on to. I'm probably a little too bitter to take on this guy personally, but I know there's people in Toledo at the open mic scene that would definitely hang out with this guy and just point him in the right direction. You don't have to hang out every day and go to lunch, go to dinners, have sleepovers, go on road trips. You don't have to do that. You just need somebody to bounce ideas off of occasionally. For some people, it's going to be a lot in the beginning, and for other people, it's going to be a lot later. But for me, having the friends that I had in comedy when I was starting and still have, instrumental in flushing out ideas, finding opportunities. You know, we share and share alike our opportunities. And it's also nice to have somebody to root for other than yourself. I was listening to Bert Kreischer's podcast yesterday, and it was an older one. I don't know how old it was, but he was interviewing Tate Fletcher, who has got to be my new favorite human being in the world. I heard him on Joe Rogan's podcast, and that's why I decided to listen to it on Bert's. And I do like both Bert and Joe for different reasons, but Tate Fletcher, holy cow. That's a dude that, after hearing his podcast, I was like, that's a guy I'd have a lot to talk about with. You know, his last thing on the podcast was, I'm not just trying to win. I need us all to win. I need us all to be winning for this world to be great. And I thought, God, what a great concept. You know, because I think that there's the abundance and scarcity paradigm that happens in comedy all the time, where, you know, some comics say this phrase, they're taking food off my table, they're taking money out of my pocket, they're taking this, that. And it's a metaphor. It's just like when you know, a police officer gets shot and the police commissioner says the mayor has blood on his hands. Let's be real fucking honest right now. You only have blood on your hands if you drove a murderer to the crime scene. Okay? Like, you have to be an accessory to the murder. In a very real sense, to say something like you have blood on your hands. And to say somebody takes money out of your pocket, they literally have to be taking money out of your pocket. Just because somebody's performing and you also perform doesn't mean they took the money out of your pocket. If they tell you to cancel the gig because they have a better gig for you, and you cancel the gig, and then they book themselves in place of you and then cancel your gig that they said they had, that's taking money out of your pocket. I agree. But just because somebody's a bad comedian or a hobbyist comedian, or they're getting paid and they shouldn't be, that's not taking money out of your pocket. That wasn't your money in the first place. Taking food off the table is another thing I've heard. I got kids to raise. That's your problem. You know what I mean? Nobody came into your house, told some jokes, and then left with your groceries. That's just not how comedy works. We all kill what, you know, we all eat what we kill. It's a hunter's scenario. You have to go out, you have to stalk it, you have to kill it, and then you get to eat it. And that's just how it works. Is there a hunter? I mean, like, if you're hunting in the woods and another hunter is stalking the same deer as you and shoots it before you do, did he take food out of your stomach, off your table? No, he was more efficient at how he went about hunting the same animal. And that's just the nature of the beast. You got to stay out a little longer and find your animal. Now, I don't know anything about hunting, and there may be some sort of cardinal sin that I just evoked there, but that's my look on it. That's my take on it. There, to me, there's an abundance of places to perform, an abundance of types of performance, an abundance of people who want to be entertained. Sure, I'd like more opportunities than I'm currently getting. Do I deserve them? Probably not. Will I get them eventually? Hopefully. If I don't, I'm still going to stick with the things that I'm doing to get what I've already gotten. And, you know, you just try to grow that every year. And most people do. And enough people quit. It's like poker in that a certain number of people will only lose for so long before they quit. When I played poker, there was a lot of the same mentality of, this is all I want to do. This is all I want to do. I want to be a professional. I want to be a professional. Well, then be a professional. Stop losing. You have to win to be a professional. And I'm not saying that I was a professional poker player. I barely won more than I lost. And that's what led me to quitting eventually. I took my own advice after about 8 years. I looked at the history of it. I loved to play. It was everything to me. I mean, I would get the same way I am about not going on stage. I'd get that way if I wasn't playing poker for a long period of time. But at the end of the day, I had to look at the reality of the situation. I think I had wagered almost $500,000, and I didn't have any savings. I my biggest pull was probably like $6,000. So what was I really doing? It was wasting a lot of time. The other part of it was, poker to me was a lot like being a comedian. And I think everything I was doing prior to becoming a comedian was to try to be a comedian without being a comedian. By that I mean, like, I was trying to have the experience of being a comedian without actually being a comedian. They're showing the upstairs roof deck right now to a potential customer. So I don't want to be up here acting all weird, but I do have my legs kicked up like this is my living room. She's giving him a... You know, and what's funny is that she doesn't work here. She's not a leasing agent, so I wonder if this is like an Airbnb thing. I've been seeing those realty locks on the front door. You know, like you would if you were going to have somebody show your house with a key. And I don't know what the Airbnb policy is with a rental in a place like this, because everything that we have here is like fob entry. You have to use a little magnetic fob to get into some of the, to every floor, to get, make the elevator work, to use the stairwell, to get in the building, to get into the workout room, to get into the coffee area and the common area, even to come out here onto the roof deck. And what's awesome about this roof deck is it has Wi-Fi. And it's free. So I don't know what's going on over here, but she's definitely given him some sort of a tour. And this place is always renting out. We wanted to move our parking spot, and they only gave us 4 options. And I know some people are living, you know, have 2 cars here, but it's like $220 for your first space, and then I think it's like $150 for your second space. It's something weird like that. But parking's not that expensive compared to some places. But if I was going to live in Ohio, I'd be paying like $450 a month in rent. It's just half of my parking space. If I lived here in Chicago, I could afford to live in somebody's parking space. They're like, I'll rent out your parking space. I'll live in your car. When you go to work, I'll just set up a little pup tent, or I'll hang out outside until you get home. I don't know where I was at with that. Abundance. There's an abundance. Comedy. I'm sure I'll look back at my career at some point and say, I'm either doing this well, or I need to be doing it better, or it's time to quit. This isn't panning out. In fact, I can honestly say I've been feeling that way a little bit lately, but it's mostly because I've been reluctant to get out this new material. On top of having the injury where I was unable to perform for a couple weeks, I'm kind of coming into like a second phase of comedy. And what I realized about the way I have been performing and the way I want to be performing is authenticity is missing. I think my personality comes through, but I'd rather be talking about what happened today than a joke I wrote 2 years ago. I'd rather try to make the scenario that happened to me on the way to the show funny than, you know, what's crazy about. That being said, I'm not trying to do like a freestyle act. I'm not trying to do just improv up there. I know I'm going to have to write some jokes. But I think what's important there, as far as authenticity is concerned, is writing jokes about things that are important to me and pointing out some absurdities. I think I'm probably going to have to dig deep to think about what it is that I'm passionate about, but I can also make funny. And I feel like I have about four go-to subjects there that are on the tip of my tongue all the time. You know, things that I can speak intelligently about and also have a strong opinion one way or the other, or a strong non-opinion. And I think I just have to kind of figure out my own character to kind of flush that out. So that's what's coming. And I plan on doing most of the writing on stage, which is going to require me to listen to my sets right after I'm done, which is something I'm not historically very good at. I listen and I can watch, and it's not like some people who can't watch or listen. I just don't do it enough. But I feel like I'm at a point right now where enough of my old act has become lost to me, either from hitting my head too hard or from not performing it, that it's just a good place to start from scratch and really kind of see who I am without my act. Because I feel like that's what, you know, going up with nothing can reveal pretty quickly who you are. So we'll see. So we'll see what's up with that. I did a set for a benefit. No, it wasn't a benefit. It was Dayton's Got Talent, but it was the music portion of it. And so we did a little bit of comedy. We're at the Funny Bone, so there's about three different comedy sets that night while they were tabulating the scores. And I did one, and I went way out of my comfort zone, went into the crowd, serenaded a couple. I think I'm going to make that part of my act because, you know, I'm not a strong singer, but I think I made this funny. It wasn't funny when I performed it, but, you know, I could see where the funny would come from. And that sometimes is more important than it immediately being funny. It's like having something to work on. It's a puzzle. It's a construction job, so to speak. We've been at it for almost an hour now. I want to thank my unofficial sponsors, Republic Wireless. Visit my website. Click on the link at the top of the page. Get yourself a cell phone and pay the cheapest possible rate you can for cell phone service. Plan starting at $5 a month, topping out at about $40 a month. 5, 10, 25, and 40, I think, are the price points. And yeah, I'm about to switch to the $10 plan and go with no data. No digital roaming data. Currently, I pay $25 and I have a, you know, 4G LTE or whatever the data plan is. But I think I just want to do without the data because I feel like I'm on my phone too much when I'm not at home. I feel like if I'm at home, that's a good time to be on my phone and surfing the web. But if I'm out and about, I should be talking to people instead of buried in my phone. I realized that yesterday when I was jogging. I jogged through Northwestern University, and it was like, you know, this school costs $50,000 a year, and everybody walking on the sidewalk is looking into their phone, and I'm thinking to myself, like, for $50,000 a year, you better be soaking up every experience that you can. But I think that's kind of the difference between this generation and some of the older generations. This generation can literally get by putting their heads down and just suffering through it. I found that I graduated not too long ago with a bachelor's degree in communication, mass communication, and I can tell you in all of my classes there was no mass communicating. It was like me, one other guy or girl, and the teacher that did all of the talking. Everybody else just put their head down and got through it in a communication realm. It's so unfathomable to me. I'm sure that there was other classes that were more engaged than the ones I was in, but, you know, I was in school for 3.5 years working on this thing, and I just noticed, I think, that they get that from the high school level all the way to this level. People are teaching to the test, not to the intelligence. Some teachers were very talented, and some were just putting their heads down and suffering through it, just like the students. But I think that's probably what the key is about the abundance and scarcity, is that if you're scared that there's not an abundance, you should pick your head up and be excellent, because there's not an abundance of excellence in this world. There is an abundance of mediocrity. You don't have to be that good at anything to be considered excellent. Now, sure, figure skating, there's some things that clearly don't look good to the layperson, but every job I've ever had, I just did what was asked of me, and most people were like, wow, you're a really amazing employee, because I was just doing what was asked of me. And that always blew my mind. But it also showed me that, you know, there's a scarcity for excellence and an abundance of mediocrity and an abundance of less than mediocre performance. In fact, if you look, that's probably who's working at McDonald's right now, is the people that are just less than mediocre, because they're the people that know they have to take minimum wage. Like, I don't want to work that hard. I want them to know I don't want to work that hard. So I have to look for people that want to hire people who don't want to work hard. Will $15 an hour fix that? Probably not. But it's I'll tell you what, because it's not going to happen overnight. A lot of people that don't deserve $15 an hour are going to get $15 an hour. And nothing will drive a $15 hour employee away faster than having to work with a bunch of $7 an hour employees who are actually making as much as them. But once enough businesses open and they hire the right employees, and the right employees are able to set the new standard of working hard, or at least working and doing what was asked of them, I think that it could come around. Because personally, I'd work in fast food for $15 an hour. I would. I'd do just about anything for $15 an hour. I just wouldn't want to have to do it with people who didn't deserve $15 an hour. And I'm not saying I'm the determining factor. I'm saying I don't want to do it with people who are too lazy to get $15 an hour. You know, it's like, even at $15 an hour, the discrepancy of people working hard and not working hard is going to shine even harder. It's like, you're getting as much as me to do this? You know, at $7 an hour, you're getting as much as me to do this? All that does is de-incentivize me to work less. It's not going to incentivize me to work more if we're both making shit and doing shit. But if we're both making good money and I'm doing all the work and you're not, I'm going to have you get fired. Or do whatever it takes to make sure that they know you don't deserve what I deserve. That sounds kind of assholey and elitist. But I'm all for people who work as hard as me getting what I get. In a work sense. And I'm not relaying this into comedy at all. Because I'll be the first one to tell you, I don't work very hard at comedy. I may work harder than you or somebody else who knows they don't work very hard. But, you know, the only question I've ever given when somebody says, wow, you know, how hard do you work? The only answer I ever give is not hard enough. I think that's the only legitimate answer to that question for just about 99% of comedians, which is why I'm doing the podcast and I'm trying to stay more regular with it. And I thank you for everyone that listened last week. That was one of my best listened to episodes, and I got a lot of feedback. And so thank you. And thank you for listening to this one, if you're listening to this one. And thank you for listening to all of them, if you've listened to all of them. And thank you for listening to one of them, if you've only listened to one of them. Thank you, thank you, thank you from the bottom of my heart. This is an exercise in, can it be done? Is it worth it? I enjoy doing it. And for that reason alone, I keep doing it. But when I find out other people enjoyed listening to it, it's better than telling a good joke. It's better than picking that booger that's at the top of your nose. It's better than a fresh booty. You know, I can't stand an unfresh booty. And when my booty's fresh, I'm probably in a good mood. And when the podcast goes off without a hitch, when I do an hour straight without having to stop and restart, I'm happy. And so far, I think we've hit that mark. So we're going to end it on a good note. And I hope you have a good weekend. If you're listening to this on Monday, I hope you have a good week. you're listening to this on Sunday, I hope you got to see the Pope. And if you're listening to this within minutes of me uploading it on Friday afternoon, it should be up by 2:30. Enjoy yourself tonight. Have a drink on me. And by on me, I mean find somebody else to pay for it. And give me the credit.
Dream, it says it's so right, we'll be